Good evening.
I'm Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom in LA Coaching. I was waiting for the lady with the voice, but she didn't act like she wanted to come. But anyway, I want to welcome you to the show. We're going to talk with Christine Cargoni tonight. We're going to talk about money and financial. Is it time for a financial health checkup for you? She's with Life Services LLC. And Christine Cargoni was a financial person. She went to college. She's also a, let me get all the stuff. And she's went to college, and she's also a financial deal. And she's wrote a book called Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And the book is actually wrote in a fairy tale. I got it right here in front of me. But the thing is, the fairy tale tells you the story on how to expand your life. And there's also websites in there where you can go and learn and expand. This book is written to expand you. Christine and her partner are dedicated to the education of individuals, whether alone or in a group setting. An educated investor makes decisions that make them comfortable with the volatility of the marketplace. And we're going to, without any further ado, I'm going to bring Christine Cargoni on. And welcome to the show, Christine.
Good evening, Mr. Robert. It's always enjoyable to speak and be on Cowboy Wisdom.
Well, thank you. And here's the thing, that the volatility of the market, people unwilling to learn that and feel uncomfortable with that and don't understand it. Is that one of the biggest reasons people don't invest, Christine?
Oh, Robert, I really think one of the biggest reasons people don't invest is that they don't understand the stock market. They don't understand how it works, and so they don't have time to do it. That's one of the reasons why we wrote Financial Fables, is that it's a very easy way to learn how to deal with your finances. And investing actually is only one part of your finances. But one of the biggest parts of investing is risk management. And a lot of people don't realize that sometimes on the volatility of the market, one of the first things that I always tell people when they invest in a stock is know how much money you want to lose or how much money you're willing to risk. And that's what a lot of very professional people do. They put what they call in a stop loss. And they say if they buy the stock for maybe $60 a share after they do their due diligence and decide they want to invest in a company, and they say, okay, maybe I'll risk losing 10 to 15%. Well, what they'll do is they'll put a stop loss at $51 a share. And then sometimes when the market starts going down, and if somebody, maybe one person decides they're only going to lose $5 a share, and they put their stop loss in at $55, then it starts, the automatic stop loss register starts selling stock. And then it goes down, down, down. So sometimes you get a lot of volatility in the market only because there's automatic stop losses in place.
And see, a lot of people don't understand when they invest as the stock goes up, raise that stop loss limit to up where you keep your money. And see, a lot of people don't pay attention to that. They think once it's in there, they don't have to pay attention to it. But isn't when you buy a stock paying attention to it just about like having a teenager, you got to keep your eye on it?
Well, Robert, it depends on which stock it is. It also depends upon the trading strategy that you want to take. Now, if you went with a Warren Buffett is called the Oracle of Omaha, and he has always a long-term view on his holdings. He goes into a stock because he believes in the core value of the company. Peter Lynch of Merrill Lynch actually always used this philosophy too. What Peter Lynch used to do is he used to say that his wife was the best stock indicator for him. He would go and say, what is my wife buying now? And she went out, and at that time she discovered pantyhose, and she discovered cell phones, and he would watch her in her purchasing aspects, And he would look into the companies who were strongest in that particular trend, and then he would go ahead and buy the stock in that company. And so then, and he would hold them long term. So you actually don't have to watch it on a regular basis, but sometimes you do need to put the stop loss in because there might be something about the company that has not been disclosed to the public and that there might be a real core problem in the company. So that's why I say that you generally, when you first decide you're going to buy into a company, you should find out exactly what, how much money you're willing to risk. Now, if you diversify your portfolio and you say, okay, I'm going to buy one healthcare company, one tech company, one banking company, or even a lot of people now like to use what they call ETFs, which are exchange-traded funds. And that what they do is they don't have to buy one particular company. They just need to, the ETF actually has a basket of companies that represent that particular sector of the market. So maybe the ETF holds banking stock, the bank ETF, will have maybe a Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, so that when the whole banking sector goes up, the ETF goes up. Yeah, and so if you diversify your portfolio, you're not likely that one area will go down and the rest of the area goes up. So sometimes it's like a ladder. Sometimes you have to ladder up as you go forward.
You know, you brought up the ETFs. You know, what I understand, and I'm going to be honest, I got a question coming for you up here later. But the ETFs for the common investor are probably easier than trying to pick a stock, would you say, or is it the other way around?
Well, you have a little bit, I believe, in my own particular opinion, that ETFs are a little bit easier to utilize because, again, you don't have to know exactly which bank in that whole banking sector is going to do the best for you. You don't need to know which tech stock in that whole tech stock sector needs to do the best for you. Now, the thing is, if you have a particular product that you do like to utilize and you look into that stock, sometimes people would rather get their dividend from that particular stock rather than take the risk with the whole sector going up or down. So, you know, it really depends. As a broad range, casting a broad net, ETFs, in my opinion, are probably easier to diversify your portfolio with.
You know, for the common investor that works every day, that to me, I'm starting to really look into that more and more because now here comes a question. You know, something I discovered about myself, and I'm just going to ask you, I understood the stock market, and I've been pretty close on the gauging the up and the down, but, you know, there is something that wouldn't let me pull the trigger on stuff. I didn't understand how to get in the way I wanted to, and I also didn't understand enough about the trading of the stock to do it. So how can a person go about learning that just the trading? Because I understood the up and the down and the financials and the economy. It was just that initial getting in is where I bought. How does a person get over that?
Well, that's a twofold question, Robert, to tell you the truth. Sometimes people are just afraid to get into a stock because they think, oh, am I buying it at the right price? What if I buy it at, say, 50 and it goes down to 45 and I automatically lose 10%? Well, again, you have to go back to, do you really like this stock? Do you believe that it has this particular brand has value? And I like to use an indicator called the PE, the price per earnings. Now, the price per earnings in most of the stock market should be around 10 to 12 and sometimes 15. But sometimes you have some stocks that will go crazy, 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 like Netflix went up the PE of like 282 because there's so much potential for this stock. So, again, you have to look at the stock and then say, oh, well, maybe if I like it a lot and I believe in the fundamentals and I don't see anything outlined but it lost 5% or 10% today, maybe just in general market. Well, one of the things that Jim Cramer does, who's the Mad Money Specialist, he advises people to go in a little at a time. He'll say, you know, just buy in maybe, you know, which they call dollar averaging into your stock. So perhaps you buy, if it goes down to, if you buy at 50, you really like it, don't put everything you want to invest. Don't buy 100 shares at 50. Maybe you only buy 25 shares at 50. So if it goes back, if it goes down to 45, then, and you really like the stock, then buy another 25 shares. So have in mind about how much money you want to invest in that company, and then dollar average into it over the year. Because so, and then, but if on the other side, if it starts taking off on you, then you've gained a little bit, and then you can dollar average up. So, and there's a lot of stocks that do follow a particular channel during the year too, because of their cycles. So sometimes you can just say, I'm going to dollar average in now. I'm going to take that initial step just in case it goes up, the cycle goes up, and then maybe I'll dollar average in a little bit later in the year.
And, you know, that and that is true. But here's the thing. If you're going to invest, and the Morningstar paper's got some good, is it better for the person that doesn't have time to do, you know, to study the stocks, to get into a mutual fund that's done well over 10 years and had a pretty good track record, or is it better to try to buy individual stocks or the ETFs? Just an overall assumption on your part, Christine.
Well, you know, that's a difficult question, Robert, really difficult. I have to say that when they did a study that from 2000 to 2010, people who had been in mutual funds, just as a generality, had been in mutual funds, had the same amount of money in 2000 as they did in 2010. That because of that huge downturn that we had in 2008, plus the people had lost purchasing power risk. So their money had actually was worth in 2010 probably 15% less than it had purchasing power in 2000, the year 2000. Again, we had some uncommon events during those years. We had the 9/11 attack in 2001, and then we had the banking crisis. So we did have, for that particular period of time, we did have unusual events. That being said, there are some mutual funds that I think are fit very well. I do like balanced funds for people who need to have or a little bit of safety, income equity funds. The manager will actually balance on the stocks a 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Yeah, so, and over the long run, they can give you a dividend plus increase modestly. So if you're just starting out, if you want to look at some type of conservative or risk-averse investment, a mutual fund can fit the bill for you.
You know, I got one of my retirement accounts I manage myself, and if I'm looking at a stock, one of my, well, basically it just trades all kinds of mutual funds, that's the first thing I look at is 2008 to see whether that company made money and had a decent percentage, because there are still mutual funds out there that made money, even
right.
In the stock, in the bank. And I look for that first, and then I go to the 10-year, but I go to there's a line over there that's called percentage since it's been in service. That
right.
is the one I go by. Because
uh-huh.
if you can find a track record, you can find a pretty good stock. How is that, just that premise on managing, like, be basically an ETF in its own way, but how is that for managing, and what would you give people advice on that?
To manage ETFs or manage mutual funds?
Right? I mean, just to look for a stock, but how is that when you start looking for something to look at 2008 and then it sets the beginning and 10-year track record? How is that for people to look at to start looking for a mutual fund?
Well, the first thing I tell people when they start looking at the mutual fund is always this, to check the Morningstar ratings. Morningstar assigns a star rating to their to mutual funds. And it doesn't mean that they, the mutual fund has not lost any money. It just means that that is the best run mutual funds if you can get 4 and 5 stars. So for that particular category, and each mutual fund is supposed to be, you know, a particular category and defined. So you have large cap, mid cap, small cap mutual funds. You have international, and the manager by definition needs to stay within a definition of the function of the mutual fund. So you know exactly what you're buying, what type of basket of stocks that you're buying when you go into a mutual fund. The only thing that I think that a lot of people make mistakes about mutual funds is what you were saying before, that a lot of times people will buy and forget them over the long run. And I'm a firm believer in rebalancing your mutual funds. You actually should keep a particular balance. If a large cap mutual fund is way out of kilter with the percentage that it should represent, then you rebalance. A long time ago, there was a portfolio that was called the Coffee House Portfolio, and it was based all on Vanguard mutual funds. And it basically would give you a particular percentage of large cap, small cap, mid cap funds, and then it would say at some point in time when you're rebalancing, at least every 6 months, if you have more than 10% in large cap, then take that money out and rebalance it to where it's supposed to be. Again, this is kind of like a ladder effect. You know, you're taking from the sector that's gained a lot of money, putting it into the sector that has less money. Because one thing about the market is that the market generally does continue to cycle, and the sectors of the market, one sector that has been gaining in a previous year may not be the sectors that are gaining in the future.
It is something to keep eye on, but it's also now you have to keep the eye on the international events that are going on, too. Wouldn't you say keep your eyes on that and kind of understand what's going on, Christine?
Well, we are in a global economy, Robert. We definitely are in a global economy. And that's why the Dow Jones Industrials, that represents the largest companies in the United States, are doing so well. They, you know, people internationally will invest in the United States, and the companies from the United States are companies like IBM, McDonald's, Walmart. They're spreading internationally, and they're creating a marketplace on an international basis. So it behooves all the corporations, if there's peace in the world, and that there, you know, in one thing about the world, Robert, is that we're all human, and we don't want our pocketbooks to be hit hard. Apparently, even the head of Russia, Vladimir Putin, feels that way.
Yeah, and you know, 2008 was an education for everybody. And also, you can go to Christine's website, financialstorytelling.com, and you can see the book, Financial Fables, 7 Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And you also can go to Amazon.com and find it, and you can go to Christine's other website, and that's financeandlife.com, and get your financial health checked and allow her to open your life. Now, here comes another question. Would you say the kids that, you know, I'm starting to understand this. A lot of the lower income people in the world, and it's like my family, I grew up in the 30s when the stock market crashed. That was ingrained into me that the stock market was bad and only wealthy people could do it. How is that poverty consciousness changed, or is it still about the same in your opinion or your idea, and how a person can teach their parents can teach their kids to invest? That's a two-part question for you.
Well, Robert, that is, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I do have a passion for financial psychology. I study it all the time, And financial behavior is very interesting. Whenever you work with a financial planner, there's a series of questions that you answer for the planner so that they can help guide you to your ultimate goals. But one of the problems right now is that most people don't understand that financial planning or investing generally used to be for the rich. Up until the 1980s, it cost $80 a trade. So if you traded, you had to call a broker, you had to place your trade, and you paid $80 to buy stock and $80 to sell the stock. That means that every time that you bought or sold something, it cost you $160. And in 1980, that was a lot of money. That's probably cost you like $250 to $300 in today's dollars. So with the advent of the Internet, and most people are still not acquainted with how the Internet has changed our lives so much, it's really has made a great leveling factor between rich and the affluent and the middle class. Because with the advent of the Internet, which just started in the early 90s, so sometimes you think it's been here for so long that it's always been with us, but it just started in the early 90s that people started to be able to access information for their own. And then by 2000, the late 1990s, then you had the access to brokerage accounts where you could buy and sell stock. And it used to be $15.95 to $20 to buy stock, buy and sell a trade. And now it's down to $7.95 or $6.95 or $5.95 to buy and sell. So, again, the information came to us. Now, here's the problem, is that most of us learn finance from our parents. And if our parents were not exposed to that, they did not teach us to do that. Just like you say that you were ingrained that the stock market was a bad place to be. I still have people that come to me and say, I would never invest in the stock market. It is too risky to do so. They would rather keep their money in a mattress under the bed. And to those people, I'd have to say, if that's what makes you comfortable, Robert, if that's what makes you comfortable, then invest in something that you do feel comfortable with. If you think that if you feel the stock market is too risky, some people would rather invest in gold coins. And some people would rather invest in numismatic attempts. I think that a lot of people, different types of coins, different types of silver coins. In fact, if you would have invested in silver 10 years ago, you would have ended up with a small fortune because the price of silver has risen so dramatically. So I don't think that it's a matter of always going into the stock market. I think it is a matter of going with something that you know may appreciate in value, and some people like to invest in antiques. They know antiques better. They're in from a part of the country where they appreciate fine furniture, so they would rather have a fine antique in their home to sell in case they become into financial problems. There's just different ways to invest.
You know, something kind of funny struck me. You know, the people that are scared of the stock market of getting six lanes of traffic going 70 miles an hour, but that ain't a risk.
Oh, believe me, Robert, I've seen it happen. Sometimes I think, being down here in Florida, they're crazy out there.
Yeah, and here's the thing. How would teaching kids in school the basics of finance really expand them, and also teach them, just have a class on general life that they had to live an hour, from freshman to high school, where they had everyday choices to make, keep their finances, but also have a class where it teaches them how the stock market, look for stocks. What would that do to the economy and to the way of life of this country?
I believe it would transform the average person's life, because they would then start looking at money as a tool and not as an emotion. They would see that when they write a check how the money goes out of an account and that not to spend more money than you have into an account. This is why we actually, another reason why we wrote Financial Fables is so that people who read it could share with a younger generation, share these concepts in an easy storytelling way with a younger generation. It's very popular for homeschooling. Just to tell a story and then look at one or two of the websites and see how the website information associates to the story. And you learn, and the person that you're talking to learns, and, you know, even if you had a child there. It would be wonderful, but and I don't know why they don't have a basic finance course in high school for, you know, it should be something that somebody should have to pass when they're in 9th or 10th grade. But, you know, really, Robert, we start learning as individuals financial concepts very early in life. Our earliest teachers are our parents. We observe how they spend money, how they like to spend money, and we mirror that on from 1 to 3. So if your parents are impulse buyers, you probably will have a tendency to be an impulse buyer. And then by kindergarten, we start learning how to barter. You know, in kindergarten, children learn how to play store, how to play house. So we start learning those financial concepts, but we never quantify them for people as far as them understanding what the effects are in our individual lives.
So here comes a question. I'm looking at the book, and there's something here that really always grabs me is smartaboutmoney.org. It's the National Endowment of Financial Education. People can go on there. There's enough blogs, e-zines, enough information out there. You can educate yourself as good as anything by being a reader and taking action, wouldn't you feel?
Oh, smartaboutmoney.org is one of the greatest ones for the National Endowment of Financial Education. They actually have a child site. There's a couple different sites in there that are specifically aimed for children. In the last story of the Sleeping Beauty, there's specific references of one book that's referred to for parents and then one book that's referred to specifically for children. So we try to make that a broad range of why and how it's applicable for parents and children to learn financial education. And you can do it together. There's games that they put together on that site so that the children can learn about finance through games.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. If you can make money a game, you can win or lose, but it's teaching yourself. It's never the money's fault. It's always the person with the lack of knowledge. The lack of wisdom about money and what to do with it is the one that loses, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, again, Robert, you can't generalize. You know, sometimes you can make the best decisions in the world and some of the information is not disclosed to you. Or, you know, there might be something out there that you can't possibly know that will happen. For example, 2 weeks ago when President Obama said he was going to bomb Syria and the stock market went down, you know, about a couple percentage points. You know, that's something that most Americans felt, you know, would not have happened. But if it did, they wouldn't know how far that war would spread in the Middle East. And so they wanted to be more conservative and to get out of stocks in case that something would happen where a war would spread. Sometimes there are economic factors that are basically beyond your control. And, you know,
yeah, but I mean, in my part, when it comes, I understand now, Christine, the more reading and the more I learn, the better off I am is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, very definitely. You know, very definitely. And I tell you the reason why that's true, Robert, is because, you know, education is something that no one can take away from you. I always tell people that when they come to me and they want to invest, the first thing I say to them is, have you invested in your education? I believe personally that it is the best investment that anybody could ever make. If the invest in their own, themselves, if they, for example, your particular program about expanding their knowledge and expanding their lifestyle and expanding their spirituality, you know, those are investments in yourself, because as if you're a happy person, if you're content with yourself, you're going to make money. It's going to come to you. It just does, because, and you don't spend as much. You're not looking to fill an empty hole, you know, with things when you know that you're content with yourself.
And that's absolutely true. The half hour has passed already, but if parents can start reading blogs and teaching their kids about investing and about money, that will expand the world, wouldn't you feel, Christine?
I think it would be transformational. You know, children are givers. They absorb a lot of information. They'll absorb faster. They'll learn better. And, you know, the United States is like the most poorest country in the world. So, you know, as these children come to, and they become the blossoms and the wonderful people that they will become in the future, they will provide financial support for the rest of the world. And as the rest of the world develops, you know, and no one has anything to lose, you have more prosperity and more peace.
And that's it. Peace and prosperity are probably the greatest assets this world could endure, don't you think?
Yeah, indeed, you're right. Peace and prosperity is, you know, in when you say that, you know, you don't have anything to lose, you know, when somebody has something to lose, they're more apt to try to be peaceful rather than, you know, it's generally when somebody doesn't have anything to lose and they'll go for it, and you know that, and they, you know, their backs are against the wall, they don't have anything to lose. When they have something to lose, they're more reasonable about talking about, you know, what can be done to save the situation.
Isn't that kind of what the whole Middle East is right now?
In the 1970s, they said that the Middle East was a tinderbox and it was going to explode. And then they got into a peace process between Egypt and Israel. And, you know, and from that point in time, there has been, you know, some headway and a little bit of steps forward, a little bit of steps backward. But there has always been some Arab countries that have been very much with the United States in trying to keep the peace process going. So, you know, again, there's a lot of dependency of the United States on Arab oil, and they became very rich from that particular dependency. That's something that they don't want to lose either. You know, they want to keep this peace process going. They don't want to lose that particular, that prosperity. But let me tell you something, Robert, that I've observed in the past, is that the attack on 9/11 was a financial attack. And one of the things that people won't realize is that when they attacked the World Trade Center, it was very symbolic. They could have attacked an hour or two later when there were more people in it. They didn't. They attacked early in the morning because they wanted to send a message that it's going to be a financial attack and there's going to be more financial attacks on the world economy. And so you do have to be diligent when you do invest and to know what you're investing in. And that's why, you know, it's good to go with a financial advisor. There's some people out there that will do pro bono work, which means that they, if you don't have anything and you just need help, there's people who will provide free help for you. Even the Internal Revenue Service has a volunteer tax service that they will help. People will volunteer and help. There's government agencies that will help. They'll help you determine how much you can get from Social Security, for example, if you're at that age. So there's different agencies out there. There's different people that are willing to help. You just have to be willing to reach out and say, I need help.
You know, ain't that the biggest thing there is? Just saying,
right.
I need help.
And, yeah, people sometimes still that they don't want to admit they need help. And I always, you know, I'm always like, help me as much as you can. Yeah, I'm humble. I don't care. Somebody can help me anytime they want to.
And, you know, here's the thing that's really a lot of people don't know. The three hardest words in the world to say, it ain't I love you, it's I don't know. And that's why people don't really understand money, because they don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I know that it's difficult for people to say, I don't know. And you know, I think that most people would like to know, but they sometimes look at it and they've been ingrained, like you said before, they've been ingrained with their parents' aspects of it, and they think that it's too difficult to learn. And that's why I wanted to simplify it, so that that people would come through and not feel that it's too difficult to learn. It is not that difficult. You just have to get some kind of parameters of how much risk you want to take and how you're going to take it.
You know, I got a name for that now.
What's that?
It's called Guru-some Truth. Not the gruesome truth. It's a Guru-some Truth.
I like that.
And you got to admit it to get it. And if you don't know, the quicker you admit it, you get it.
Yep, you have a way with words. You always do.
Anyway, Christine, we're out of time. And the websites are financialstorytelling.com. You can go there and get your book, Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And you can go to financeandlife.com and get your financial checkup with Christine and Renee. And you can also go to Amazon.com and get the book, Financial Fables, Seven Tales to Transform Your Financial Life and More. And Christine, give the people some wisdom to close the show, and I'll go.
And if you would like to get weekly wisdom, we do have a Facebook page. Financial Storytelling has a Facebook page. If you look on Facebook for Financial Storytelling, you can find us, and at least once a week, we put information on.
All right, and now the wisdom is for the world to expand from Christine is?
Use your money as a tool of peace and prosperity. When you have peace of mind, you have everything.
And that is true, and I'm Robert Wilson. I'll be here Thursday night with another Christine, and we're going to talk more about personal growth and expanding the world, because the more we expand in wisdom and innovation, the more the peace and prosperity comes forth. Thank you, Christine, and thank all the listeners for being here.
Thank you, Robert. Take care of yourself.
And you too, and good night, everybody.
Good night.